With the latest agriculture news from across the state and nation, it's time for the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. Here's your host, Sabrina Halvorsen.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us this morning on the AgNet News Hour. Coming up later, economic challenges in front of the almond industry and getting the low-hanging fruit of digital assets in agriculture. We'll explain more. But our top story today, the Farm Service Agency takes enrollment applications and election signups for two of its Farm Bill Farm Safety programs through March 15th. Rod Bain reports.
Enrollment and election are now open for producers wishing to sign up for either of USDA's Farm Bill Farm Safety Net programs. Farm Service Agency Administrator Zach Ducheneau says for agriculture risk coverage and price loss coverage.
Our PLC election and enrollment opened on December 18th. Producers can complete that enrollment and change any elections that they make until March 15th, 2024.
As the 2023 Farm Bill has been extended for 1 year. For ARC and PLC coverage to be obtained for the 2024 crop year. Administrator Ducheneau says producers need to be mindful that
ARC and PLC elections can impact eligibility for some different crop insurance products.
More details about ARC and PLC and crop year 2024 enrollment and election are available through local FSA offices or online at farmers.gov. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
On most dairies, the big question is, how do I put more milk in the tank? Chad Smith has an answer.
One potential answer lies in improving persistency or helping cows maintain milk production after they peak. Brittany Wood, Director of Canola Utilization for the Canola Council of Canada, shares advice on how to improve persistency on the dairy.
Persistency is really about the dairy cow producing high quality milk at high volume for as long as they can. We think about this milk lactation curve that the dairy cow has. They give birth to their calf, then they are increasing their milk production, reaching a peak milk production a few months into that lactation curve. And then over the course of the next following months, they slowly start to reduce the amount of milk that they're producing. The idea around persistency is that they meet that peak and then they keep producing high volumes of milk for as long as possible, reducing that rate of decline of milk production so that the cow is putting more milk into the milk tank and improving profitability for the farm.
Improving persistency is a challenge for the dairy industry.
It has been a bit of an elusive task for the dairy industry to understand this from a genetic point of view. It was thought to be mainly controlled by genetics, but that persistency or heritability factor of that persistency through genetics is really low. You have to look at other areas of management and understand what is in your control within your management that you can do to help support the cow. And we really do now have some research that's looking at protein sources to see how they can actually work to support the cow during that time period.
That research took place during a trial at the U.S. Dairy Forage Research Center.
They looked at feeding cows diets that contained either canola meal or soybean meal. Cows started on trial about 85 days into milk, so they were post that peak milk. And when they looked at the cows at about 4 weeks into treatment, they found that the canola meal fed cows actually were producing 2.9 pounds more milk per day. This is an observation that is really consistently seen in the literature. When we feed cows canola meal, it's very consistent that they will produce more milk compared to other protein sources. At the end of the trial, when they compared those two groups again, they found that the canola meal fed cows were actually producing 7.2 pounds more milk per day than the other treatment. And canola meal fed cows had greater persistency and were able to have a lower rate of decline.
Wood talks about how to pick the right protein.
You want to understand what ingredients you have available to you and understand what you're working with. And the amino acid profile of those ingredients is a really good thing to understand. And so every protein ingredient brings something a little bit different. So I mentioned about the canola meal bringing that methionine and histidine, which are really essential amino acids for the cow. Soybean meal is a great source of lysine, also very important. And so working with your nutritionist to really understand what you have available to you is going to be a good place to start.
If you want more information on feeding canola, go to canolamazing.com. Chad Smith reporting.
Don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search for the Agnet News Hour on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's Agnet News Hour, and it is available on both Apple and Android devices. This is the Agnet News Hour. I'm Sabrina Halverson, and we will be back in just a moment. You are listening to the Agnet News Hour. I'm Sabrina Halverson. In today's national spotlight, at the start of the new year, a new law requires millions of U.S. businesses to report its information. David Geiger has this report.
Congress wants to curb financial crime, so it passed the Corporate Transparency Act a few years ago, going into effect at the start of 2024. Christine Tidgren with Iowa State University's Center of Ag Law and Taxation says this will cause a bit more work. Farmers and farm businesses will be required to register. The problem to solve is shell companies. Anyone can make one, and there's no required reporting.
So things like money laundering, financial transactions that are corrupt, these have been able to take place under the radar, and the people involved haven't necessarily been easy to find.
Now, Tidgren says around 32 million entities will need to report to the U.S. Department of Treasury's Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, affecting some producers.
If you're just a farmer who just farms in your own name and you haven't set up any sort of entity like an LLC, you won't have to do this reporting. But if you're a limited partnership, you had to go to the Secretary of State's office to get that limited liability protection. So you'll be subject to this as well.
This includes LLCs and corporations. Farmers will have to fill out paperwork for beneficial owners, which includes those who own 25% or more or have substantial control.
The company's going to have to report their officers, somebody who's making the decisions for the company, that type of thing.
Tidgren says small businesses will need to provide information about their business, then beneficial owner names, addresses, and a picture of a photo ID.
To prove who they are. So it's going to be a little bit of an administrative challenge because the rules also say if at any point after you've made your first report, any of that information changes, maybe one of the beneficial owners dies, maybe the address of one of the beneficial owners changes, then you'll have 30 days to make updates.
Two groups will be reporting starting next year. Brand new companies will have 90 days to enter the information to the online portal as they set up. Tidgren says attorneys will help out in that case. The other category of existing businesses have a full year to report.
I would suggest these people talk to the attorney that set up the entity for them. If they didn't work with an attorney, then I would suggest they can read the rules that are out there. There's lots of information available to try to figure out what you have to report.
But finding the beneficiaries to report might not be as easy as talking to your CPA.
Because there's a little bit of lack of clarity of whether doing that type of work is the practice of law. So it's really the attorney that helped you set up the entity that's probably best positioned if you have questions about how to make these beneficial ownership reports.
Tidgren adds one thing is clear. This applies to all entities.
And this includes even single member LLCs. So a lot of times people might think, oh, well, I'm just a sole member LLC. That's disregarded for tax purposes. Well, that is not disregarded for beneficial ownership information reporting purposes.
As for privacy concerns, Tidgren says the information is only available to the government.
It is not available to the public. No one can, you know, put in a FOIA request and try to find out the beneficial owners of a particular entity. It is only for trying to get a handle on financial crimes.
The Corporate Transparency Act portal does not open until 2024, so no early reporting is allowed. Tidgren has put up a blog post with more information on the subject, as well as links to places farmers may want to go to learn more. It is at calt.iastate.edu. I'm David Geiger.
That's today's National Spotlight. Now here's Will Jordan with the Livestock Report.
In today's livestock news,
it's the most comprehensive effort out there to collect information about American agriculture.
The USDA National Agricultural Statistics Service will release the 2022 Census of Agriculture in early 2024. I visited with Lance Honig, acting chairman of USDA's Agricultural Statistics Board, to learn more.
The Census of Ag is a huge effort that we carry out every 5 years. We release it every 5 years. But the work never really stops because it is such a big effort. It's the most comprehensive effort out there to collect information about American agriculture. If you think about it, there's a little more than 2 million farms out there, or have been. We'll see what the census tells us in February of 24. But that means if you're going to reach out to every single one of them and those who might be farms, that is a huge, huge effort. But it's so worth it because you're talking about millions and millions of data points coming out in February, in fact, on February 13th. And that is critical information that can be used by everybody involved in agriculture. Think about things like policy, right? A little thing called the Farm Bill being talked about a lot these days. You got to have accurate, complete information if you're going to have a good Farm Bill. You think about all these programs that are out there supporting America's farmers. You need them to be based on good, solid, accurate information so that they're helping the people that need to be helped. They're reaching the people. They're being used where they're supposed to be used. That's the type of data that the census provides.
To view a previous census of agriculture or to learn more about the upcoming 2022 census, Lance shares more.
So it's all going to be available online at nas.usda.gov, just like all of our data. We put out more than 400 reports every single year. So if you think about it, on average, we're putting out a report more than one a day. And so there's always information coming out to support the work that's being done in agriculture. It's all made available on our website. It's all made available to everyone at exactly the same time. That's how we level the playing field. Nobody gets an advantage by seeing the data early.
In other livestock news, with the recent 20-year anniversary of the first confirmed case of BSC in the U.S. and the cow that stole Christmas, Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service Administrator Kevin Shea discusses safeguards that prevent bovine spongiform encephalopathy from entering the beef cattle supply chain.
It was a real silver bullet in the worldwide fight against BSC, determining that feeding cattle to cattle essentially spread the disease. So when cattle material got into feed in certain parts of the world, that was transmitted as the cows ate the feed. And so we in the United States and most every country around the world really put in a ban against doing that. Another set of safeguards in place is to make sure that the parts of the animal that can contain BSC, which is mostly brain material, spinal cord material, we in the United States and every country around the world now removes what we call specified risk materials from the carcasses of cattle that are brought into slaughterhouses for feed. We also do lots of surveillance, and we've tested millions of cattle over the years to see if there are any signs of BSC anywhere. The disease doesn't really manifest itself in younger cattle. It's only cattle 8 years and older. Most beef cattle in the U.S. go to slaughter within 18 to 30 months. So that's another safeguard that is in place.
For AgNet West, I'm Will Jordan.
This is the AgNet News Hour. I'm Sabrina Halverson. We will be back in just a moment with more agriculture news and farm features when we return.
Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour. I'm Sabrina Halverson. Coming up in a few moments, we'll have today's This Land of Ours report, but first, more of the day's agriculture news. And with today's AgNet West headlines, here's AgNet West Farm News Director, Brian German.
The California almond industry is facing a variety of economic challenges. Senior analyst covering fruits and tree nuts for Rabo AgriFinance, David Magana, said one of the issues has been the expectation of a recession that's been discussed for the past 2 years.
Hopefully we don't have a recession after all, but it seems like if we do, it's going to be a brief and not too deep. So that's on the macro side, but if we look at the industry, still challenges on the demand side as consumers continue to trade down and face the challenges due to this inflationary environment. So still inventories are quite high despite the fact that back-to-back crops have been lighter than the record crop in 2022. So that has put pressure on prices and margins. So on the one hand, we see a lot of changes, but on the flip side, we see a set of challenges that remain the same.
Some California ports have experienced increased volume during the month of November. The Port of Los Angeles experienced a 19% year-over-year increase in cargo volume, processing more than 763,000 20-foot equivalent units for the fourth consecutive month. The growth is attributed to the strength of the U.S. economy, with strong Black Friday and Cyber Monday sales driving consumer demand. Loaded imports at the Los Angeles port increased by 25%, loaded exports by 24%, and empty containers by 10% compared to the previous year. The Port of Long Beach also reported robust growth with a 24.2% increase in cargo volume to more than 731,000 TEUs in November. Both ports are optimistic, having recaptured market share and reduced volume declines. Despite uncertainties, both Los Angeles and Long Beach anticipate continuing gains in cargo volumes from Pacific trade in the coming year. Data collection, artificial intelligence, and automation are some of the leading ag tech trends that hold tremendous potential for farming operations. Founder of Better Food Ventures, Rob Trice, said there's a significant number of opportunities for technological advances to help address agricultural issues. However, some are easier to achieve than others.
I think there's easy challenges, you know, regarding like asset management, deployment, resources, optimization that can be solved with easy amounts of data. We just need to get those things lined up, right? So that's kind of where I think that low-hanging fruit exists. Speaking of low-hanging fruit, though, probably the holy grail of this automation is harvest. That's one of the most complex things that AI is going to allow us to do. We've actually invested in a company that's doing tomato harvesting for greenhouses. But once we've achieved that with the automation, that's going to be when we've done what we need to do.
The U.S. Regenerative Cotton Fund can offer a variety of support and resources to growers interested in soil health management systems. Jessica Kelton with the Soil Health Institute provides details on how growers can benefit from RCF resources.
At the Soil Health Institute, one of the projects that I work on is the U.S. Regenerative Cotton Fund. And really the focus of that project is to encourage the adoption of soil health management practices for growers, but recognizing that not just one person has all the answers for growers, whether they're interested in adopting for the first time or they're experienced and maybe want to change up practices. So getting involved with the U.S. RCF allows growers to be able to be put in touch with technical specialists that have that local expertise, that local knowledge. So when you have that question of where do I start or where can I improve, that you can access someone who understands what you need to be doing in your area.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture is hosting more than a dozen in-person and virtual workshops this winter for producers to learn more about new and expanded livestock risk management products. The Livestock Roadshow, hosted by USDA's Risk Management Agency, will highlight policy improvements based on feedback from America's livestock producers as part of the agency's broader outreach and education efforts. To ensure livestock producers across the country can attend one of the events, RMA will be hosting two virtual roadshows. One is scheduled for January 8th and the other one on January 17th. There will also be an in-person event for California producers on January 17th at the RMA Regional Office in Davis. Topics for the roadshows include livestock risk protection, annual forage, and dairy revenue protection. More information on the roadshows is available on the upcoming events page at agnetwest.com. I'm Brian German for Agnet West Radio Network.
Food prices could make news again in 2024, but it may be good news. That's coming up on This Land of Ours.
In 2022, food prices at the grocery store made news by increasing just under 11.5%. This current year looks like prices will rise by about 5%. And what about 2024?
Food prices are expected to continue to decelerate or slow in 2024.
In fact, USDA says they could descend enough to make news of a different kind, a happy kind. USDA economist Megan Schweitzer told us
food at home prices,
that's food bought at the grocery store,
are predicted to decrease 0.6%. in 2024.
Down by 0.6% below 2023. And the news story from that is this.
So the last time we saw a decline in food prices at the grocery store, an annual decline, was in 2017.
But Megan says I shouldn't be too excited just yet.
We are quite a ways out from the end of next year.
Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
This is the AgNet News Hour. We will be back in just a moment with more agriculture news. Welcome back. Farmers across the nation who planted Pioneer brand corn hybrids from Corteva Agriscience have seen field-proven performance with winning results in this year's annual National Corn Growers Association Yield Contest. Michael Clements shares more.
David Hula of Charles City, Virginia, set a new world record of 623.84 bushels per acre with Pioneer brand corn product P14830VYHR. Hula crushed his previous world record of 616 bushels per acre set in 2019 with the Pioneer brand P1197 family of products. Corteva Agriscience North America President Judd O'Connor congratulated Hula and all NCGA Corn Yield Contest winners.
Congratulations to David and to all the winning farmers in this year's contest. On behalf of Corteva and our Pioneer experts in the field, we couldn't be prouder to serve you as partners. Your results reflect the incredible goals farmers across the nation aspire to achieve.
This marks David's fifth time setting a new world record with Pioneer brand corn products.
This is why we continue to invest in R&D advancements to provide farmers with the latest corn seed technology and top-tier genetics that they need to be successful on their farms. Our goal is to offer farmers a powerful portfolio of Pioneer brand seed products that meet their needs and achieve their highest yields yet.
Andy Ross, Corteva AgriScience corn breeder, discussed R&D advancements and achievements in corn breeding to help farmers push yield.
To be a part of making a hybrid that can go and showcase American agriculture and to showcase what the American farmer can do with elite genetics, it's a great feeling to be a part of pushing corn yield to its limits. To see hybrids yield as much as David got out of P14830, it's just amazing and a acknowledgement for all the plant breeders that are pushing to make better products for our customers. And so it's a really cool feeling, and it's look forward to having it again someday.
To bring new high-yielding hybrids to the market faster, Ross explains the power behind Pioneer's breeding program.
One of the pleasures about working with the germplasm at Pioneer is just the amount of diversity that we have to work with. The way we structure our breeding programs and the way we have distributed our people that focus on the germplasm is that we have people that are focusing on key traits across the Corn Belt for what those growers need, whether you're in the Western Corn Belt, the Eastern Corn Belt, the South, the North. There's different traits that affect growers, and we manipulate our germplasm to be diverse enough to handle being tolerant of diseases for any one of those areas or superb agronomics for those areas. As we know, as we go across the Corn Belt, what our customers think of a leader hybrid, different agronomic traits come into play. And so by having our germplasm and our people in different environments across the Corn Belt, we couple that knowledge and accountability to refine the corn lineup, our corn pipeline, for traits that are important to our customers. And so as we do that, it changes the overall dynamics of our germplasm because we're constantly improving our germplasm for what all of our growers need.
David Hula achieved this milestone yield with a new hybrid from the freshman class of corn products from Pioneer. Ross discusses further how new leader hybrids advance to the market.
As you move into making hybrids, we have the ability to take that diversity that we created and pair up parents of hybrids to come up with all kinds of hybrids that fit growers in their different areas. And so what they need and what they determine as a leader type hybrid, we can use our germplasm and that diversity that we've created and inherited to develop products for each grower. So one of the key things that we do is not just try to find all out high pinnacle yield, but it's also to make sure that we have harvestable yield that the growers can come behind and get there when they need to and get the grain in the grain tank.
David Hula shared insights from this year's winning product and seed selection tips that help drive success on his farm.
When we were looking at P14830, you know, outside of yield, I was looking for agronomic characteristics, and one being low ear placement, also, you know, an acceptable plant height because of standability being an important issue, and then just some of the agronomic characteristics like test weight and your grain quality.
Hula decided to give a freshman hybrid P14830 a chance on his high-yielding ground because he believes his relationship with his Pioneer team and the genetics behind the hybrids is what drives his success.
Well, when we think about where our success has come from, you know, we have relationships with a lot of seed providers. But that relationship we have with Pioneer and the agronomic team is far superior to any other relationship we have. Our success here at Renwood Farms, having that partnership with Pioneer, you know, not only do we have a proven track record, but Pioneer clearly has a proven track record. And they have the genetics there, but we've created a personal relationship with that team. And that team has allowed us to filter through, and particularly when we're looking at these freshman brand hybrids, you know, it's hard to pick a hybrid without having looked at it and expect it to perform to this level in which our expectations are. But without that relationship, we wouldn't have had that success.
Hula gives advice for making the most out of next season's decisions.
As growers are preparing for the next season and they're getting ready to start ordering seed, you know, seed hybrids changing so fast. And now as we're getting into this new class of breeding, you have to have confidence with your seed provider. And as a grower, I would want to clearly talk with my seed provider, have that relationship, because as they're gonna introduce new hybrids that we have not even had time to evaluate, look at some data, but I have confidence that they're continuing to provide us with a superior product. don't be afraid to look at this freshman class, the new breeding programs that Pioneer and Corteva have been launching, because we've had great success with some of those. And having the relationship with your seed provider is key, because here, 2023, we just came off with 14,830 with a yield of 623 bushels, and then Pioneer 10,811 with a yield of 590 bushels. Both hybrids first year right out of the gate. How could you expect anything greater than that?
As for seed decisions, Hula provides his top two considerations when selecting hybrids for next year.
So when you're trying to select a hybrid, clearly we look for yield. But then number two, what is the next step that one has to overcome? Whether it's disease, standability, grain quality, dry down, or just maturity. So when we look for hybrids, we're looking for yield, standability, and then we can control most of the other things. If a grower can't control some of the other struggles, then they have to select a hybrid that can give them that strength that they need.
Farmers from 41 states had first, second, and third place yield wins with 81 unique Pioneer brand corn hybrids, highlighting the consistent performance from Pioneer brand products across multiple environments. For more complete results from this year's yield contest, go to pioneer.com/NCGA. Michael Clements reporting.
This is the AgNet NewsHour. We will be back in just a moment with more agriculture news. Welcome back to the AgNet NewsHour. Cindy Zimmerman has today's featured interview.
Here we are at the Ag Gateway Annual Conference in Nashville, and I am with the Gateway to Ag Careers students who are here, eight of them, and we're going to meet them all, starting with Clara. Clara, introduce yourself for me, please.
I am Clara Cobb. I go to Mississippi State University, and I am from a small town outside of Charlotte, North Carolina.
All right, and why are you here?
I was really interested in just learning a different side of agriculture. I work a lot on the practical side, and so I get to see software side and other parts that I don't really get to see in my research.
How has your experience been here?
It's been really awesome. I've gotten to meet a lot of really, really cool people, the fellow students and also the people attending the conference. It's been really great to meet people and see different sides of it.
How do you think it's going to affect your career in the future?
Just opening up doors to knowing different people, meeting people that have different connections within the industry. So I'm having some, troubles in my research, and so there's people that I can contact that know a little bit more about certain fields than I do. So that'll be really nice in the future.
Pleasure to meet you, Clara. All right, next, Jake. Jake. All right, Jake, introduce yourself for me, please.
Hello, my name is Jake Dempsey. I am a student at Arizona State University.
And what are you doing here, Jake?
I am here because I have knowledge about the practical side of farming, but I don't really have much side about the data and technical side. So I came here wanting to learn more about everything technical.
And how has your experience been?
It's been wonderful. I have been able to meet and connect with a bunch of students who have had plenty of different experiences from IAM, and I really enjoy learning about all those different experiences and how I can use those experiences to apply it myself.
How do you think this experience is going to help you in your career going forward?
I believe that this experience will help me in that I will be able to become more knowledgeable on stuff like drone applications, data applications, just everything that will help everything become more streamlined and easier in a future of agriculture that is more defined by data.
Excellent. Well, great to meet you, Jake.
Nice to meet you.
Kelsey, introduce yourself for me, please.
Hi, my name's Kelsey Borizaris. I'm a PhD student at the Arizona State University, and I'm doing research in controlled environment agriculture.
So what are you doing here at Ag Gateway?
Yeah, so I came to Ag Gateway because my mentor told me it was a great space to meet people in the ag industry who are doing technology innovation, and so that is a big overlap in what I'm doing with vertical farming and smart farms, so that is why I'm here.
Well, how's your experience been?
It's been great so far. I mean, people in the ag community are so nice. They're the best group of people I've ever met, and especially people here. Everybody has been so inviting, so welcoming, so interested in what I want to do and helping me pursue my research goals.
Well, and how do you think this experience is going to help you going forward in your career?
Oh, gosh, yes. Fingers crossed, I hope. I hope, anyway, that I can keep these connections, keep this network growing, and that hopefully I can continue the conversation on controlled environment agriculture and how we can continue to adapt technology in the ag space.
Well, it's been a pleasure meeting you here, Kelsey. Next. And how do you pronounce your name?
Saiza.
Saiza, introduce yourself for me, please.
Hi, I'm Saiza Sunshun. I'm a PhD student at Kansas State University.
And how did you get here at Ag Gateway?
Well, I was lucky to be chosen as one of the students for the Gateway to Ag Careers program, and it's just been a truly enriching experience to be here, learning the other side of agriculture that I'm not really dealing on right now, and just to meet a bunch of people in the industry and learn from them. So,
well, you said you were kind of last minute coming into this, right?
Yeah, yeah. Like, I truly didn't know about this one. Like I said, it's the other lab, the Precision Ag Lab in my department who is into this one. And somebody from there just sent me the link, you should try this. And I did. And thankfully, I'm here.
Well, has it been worth it? How's your experience been?
Yeah, it's just been truly worth it. Like, meeting new people, learning a bunch of things. And I've been telling my friend, I can't help but compare with the usual conference that I'm going to. There's like a diversity of topics, of sessions that I can attend to, and like that one where I'm basically on sessions that are close to what I'm doing. So this one, I've truly learned a lot.
Excellent. Well, how do you think it might help you in your career going forward?
Well, just the confidence in knowing that I would really end up where I need to be, because learning from them, they were like not ag people who ended up in ag, or they went to some other career paths that they initially chose. So right now I'm hopefully finishing my PhD soon, so it's reassuring to hear their stories. So
excellent. Yeah. Well, good to meet you here. Who's next? Justin, introduce yourself for me, please.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Justin Allange. I'm a senior at Purdue University studying computer information technology and Spanish.
How did you get here to the Ag Gateway annual meeting? Yeah.
So last summer I interned at Land O'Lakes, and I met Karen Order, and she made the right calls, got me with the right people, and next thing I know, I'm here.
How has your experience been?
It's been awesome. For someone who wants to get involved with ag but doesn't really have a connection, I've been able to finally start, you know, getting to know people and really get an established understanding of who the players are in the ag space, because I didn't know too much before coming here.
We will continue with Cindy Zimmerman right after this. And remember, if you've missed any of our newscasts, or if you just want to get the news at a different time, you can download our podcast. Simply go to your favorite podcast downloading app and search for AgNet NewsHour. That is the AgNet NewsHour, and it is available on both Apple and Android devices. This is the AgNet NewsHour. I'm Sabrina Halverson, and we will return in just a moment. Welcome back to the AgNet NewsHour. We continue now with Cindy Zimmerman speaking with Gateway to Ag Careers students at the Ag Gateway Conference.
Well, how do you, I know you're about to graduate, so how do you think this is going to help you in your career going forward?
I think it's going to be great because, of course, early career brings a whole swath of challenges, and having a variety of opportunities in different sectors within the ag industry, allowing me to really kind of pick and choose and see what I want, has been a great opportunity.
Well, it's been a pleasure to meet you, and I think you're going to go far in this industry.
Thank you so much.
Philip, how you doing?
Good.
You're the young guy here, right?
20 years ago.
All right, Philip, introduce yourself for me, please.
Hi, my name is Philip Lanza. I'm a doctoral student in digital agronomy in Louis Longchamp's lab at Cornell University.
Well, you've had a varied career already. And what brought you here to the Ag Gateway?
My advisor recommended that I apply. I work on a lot of data standardization, and my background is a software engineer, so it was interesting to see people talking about the ADAPT framework, working on similar things from a different side of the industry than I work on normally.
Well, and how do you think this will help you going forward? Are you going to land on a particular career, or are you just going to keep changing?
Well, I don't think I have much time to switch anymore, so like my wife would divorce me if I switch again, I think. But it was really great networking and meeting a lot of people to get their perspective on the type of work we're doing and seeing what they're working on. A lot of what we do is to try to co-create solutions to some of the challenges that large-scale agriculture is facing. So it's been an extremely valuable experience for me to get a lot of perspective and ideas from other people involved in other sectors of the ag industry.
Is there anything that surprised you or really stood out?
I enjoyed all of the food. You know, I love the snacks between sessions, and just the level of sophistication of some of the software engineering technologies and the focus on, you know, data standardization and traceability, data stewardship was also very interesting to me to see.
Great. Well, thanks very much. Been good to meet you here. Who's next? Rihanna. Yes. Rihanna? Okay. Introduce yourself, please.
Hi, my name is Rihanna Teege, and I attend The Ohio State University, where I study agribusiness and applied economics.
Well, how did you get here to the Ag Gateway annual meeting?
Yeah, so I work in the Precision Ag Department at Ohio State for Dr. John Fulton. He told me about the opportunity, nominated me, and happy to be here and learn from everybody that's attending.
How has your experience been?
It's been incredible. So not only did I get to meet the other students who are here and doing many different diverse research areas within ag, it's also been incredible to meet the different industry professionals who all have great insight and advice for us as we move into our careers and impacting the industry.
Well, as you move into your career, how do you think this experience is going to help you?
Absolutely. So the network that I formed, I will forever treasure and definitely leverage as I do pursue different career paths. In addition, the knowledge and the challenge to think critically, I think, will also benefit me as I continue.
Well, it's been a pleasure seeing you here.
Thank you.
Cole, how are you doing? How are you? Introduce yourself to me, please.
I am Cole Byers. I'm a master's student with the University of Georgia.
And how did you land here at the Ag Gateway annual meeting?
My advisor recommended that I come here due to all the networking connections and all the movers and shakers that are here, the people that matter in the industry. And so he figured it would be a good experience. And now that I've gone through it, I absolutely think so, too. It's a great experience to move from what I've been doing in academia with very research minded to what does that mean in the real world in the business business landscape.
Well, how has your experience been here?
Very good. It's not exactly what I expected because there's a lot more tech and data management, but I didn't realize how important that was on the grand scheme of things. In my personal experience, we've had some issues with just incompatibilities, and it's tricky to get this to work with that. But in the grand scheme of things, it seems like it's a much broader problem. And so I think what we're doing here, or what Ag Gateway is doing as a whole, is very, very important. And so I'm very glad that I was able to sit in and learn about those problems.
Well, as you go forward in your career, how do you think this experience might help you?
The obvious answer is going to be just the networking opportunity that we've had here with so many important people in the same rooms. I mean, we had a great chance to meet and talk and learn about their positions and what problems face the current market. And then secondly, by learning about those problems, we kind of are beginning to understand where our role might be in our career and what positions we might need to start to address, or what future businesses might need to address, and how the future needs to move forward with ag in that mindset.
Well, it's been a pleasure meeting you and talking to you here, Cole. Reporting from Nashville at the Ag Gateway annual meeting, I'm Cindy Zimmerman.
That's today's top agriculture news. I'm Sabrina Halverson. Thank you for sharing your morning with us.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit AgNet West online at agnetwest.com. You can also stay connected by following us on our social media at AgNet West on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also find our broadcast team of Danielle Leal, Brian German, and Sabrina Halvertson on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you for listening to the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. AgNet West Radio Network, your primary choice for agriculture news.